and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guess.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, live on this Thursday. Good to be back after a day off. MLB baseball was all over our airwaves yesterday, so we are here now and bringing you another show for the first time since a couple days ago. Good to be live. Good to be here on 1430 on this Thursday, live from Fashion Furniture. Fashion Furniture, of course, always our hosts here on this Thursday. And I want to let you know they have a big celebration coming up next week. It's their 65th anniversary ribbon cutting that's coming up on October 17th. 65th anniversary, where they're going to be giving away $50,000 worth of free furniture. They'll have a 65-foot-long cake, a ribbon cutting by Mayor Jerry Dyer himself, some all kinds of great opportunities for you to enjoy the options that are here at Fashion Furniture, live music, of course, should be a lot of fun. That is going to be next Friday, 5:30 to 7 p.m., open house kind of style here at El Paso across from River Park, the 65th annual ribbon cutting at Fashion Furniture, appetizers, live music, like I said, and a raffle for $50,000 worth of free furniture. Couldn't get better than that. Of course, the offerings they have here are fantastic. So big thanks to Fashion Furniture for having us here on this Thursday. We're going till 5 o'clock to Thursday Night Football between the Eagles and the Giants tonight on 1430. Of course, over on 790, starting in a matter of minutes, MLB postseason, the Dodgers and the Phillies game four, first pitch in about 5 minutes from now. Following them, we will have the opening night for the San Jose Sharks. They're taking on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. That's a 6:30 pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop for the San Jose Sharks as they embark on a new season with some new renewed hopes and potentially some big things on the horizon with their young core. Big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us from the previous hour. Tony D Show, Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D from 2 to 3 p.m. on these weekdays. Of course, you can listen to him live and on demand on the ESPN Fresno app and the 1430ESPNFresno.com website. That's the place to reach him. And we also live stream our show here, Fashion Furniture, live streaming right now on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook as well. ESPN Fresno is the handle you look for in terms of where you can watch the live stream. So appreciate you for watching today's live stream. Of course, we also have our other great shows, Central Valley Sports Report. Paul Metters live streams that as well. Central Valley Sports Report live on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon from First String Sports with Paul Metters talking all things high school. And, you know, he'll touch on some Fresno State. I'm sure he'll have some reactions on Saturday after tomorrow's Fresno State game, plus all the great high school stuff going on. We also have our Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show, 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show here on the airwaves. So if you have any thoughts or you want to get in on the conversation, that is the way to reach us there. Checking in on our Lee's Air Weather Check, sponsored by Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. It's 78 degrees currently, 79 the high. Getting down to 54. Going to be 79 tomorrow. Going to be very beautiful. Perfect night for some fall-like football weather. 79 and sunny tomorrow. We will be dipping into some pretty significantly lower temperatures by next week. Looking at 62 on Tuesday with 80% chance of thunderstorms. So we will see what that'll look like. So start getting those sweatshirts out. Start getting that maybe winter wear in terms of it, because it could be coming here on the horizon for you in the Central Valley. All right, we got a good show for you today, getting into all kinds of different things on the docket for you. Of course, baseball is hot on the topic for a lot of people. We'll talk about the end of Aaron Judge's remarkable season. We'll get into some high school conversation as well, some big high school games tonight, and start looking at this week and where things are going to go in the final 4 weeks of the regular season. That's right. We just have 4 weeks of regular season high school football left before we dive into playoff football. We'll talk some Fresno State potentially as well. We're going to do my Benatti Blitz today. I got a special interview tomorrow scheduled, so we're going to fit in the Benatti Blitz, pick all of the games for the week of week six. We'll talk about the Eagles-Giants game tonight in more depth as well, some injury news to pay attention to as well. So 2 hours of sports talk for you live here at Vash Furniture as we get rolling here. And excited to, of course, be joined, filling in today. Tanvir is going to be sitting next to me here for the show, so good to have Tanvir here. We usually have you off on these Thursdays, but I appreciate you coming by, filling in a little fill-in spot. How are you doing?
Doing good. I'm always down to fill in whenever you need me to fill in.
Yeah.
You know, I was happy. I wasn't really doing anything today, so I'm happy.
It worked out.
It did work out.
It worked out. So got Tanvir for a couple hours. And, yes, we got a guy who as stressed as anybody can be stressed going into tomorrow. Joe Gomez is here with his Mariners, who are on the brink or on the cusp of some awesome stuff as well. Joe, at least you're not the Yankees today. How are we doing, Joe, who's producing back at the station?
So, I mean, let's be honest. We don't care about Fresno State. We don't care about the Yankees. We care about the Mariners going to the ALCS right now. That's what we care about. That's what we need to talk about.
Hey. We got the Mariners Tigers tomorrow on 790 at I believe 4:30. So people are locked in on Mariner baseball tomorrow on our airwaves.
Are we going to be able to watch it like normal people, or is it going to be on FS1, whatever the heck it is? I don't even know what's going on.
I think it is on FS1.
That kills
tomorrow,
me.
Joe.
It kills me. You know, yeah. I don't want to ride the high seas, but you know, it's just let me watch my game.
I will bet you the Mariners will move on, and then you'll get your Fox Mariners Blue Jays series ALCS, which I think would be a fascinating ALCS if we get that.
I mean, that's the last time the Mariners won any playoffs was the Mariners when they came back from that 8-1 deficit. So
yeah.
That would be sweet. I'm excited for tomorrow, but at the same time, like you said, nervous. So is it Friday or Saturday?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Mariners play Tarek Skubal tomorrow.
Like I said,
Tarek Skubal. Skubal has not been good against the Mariners.
He hasn't. They're 2-0 against him this year.
Yeah,
so I'm not like
including game two.
Super nervous. I'm not super nervous, but at the same time, that is their ace. So,
yeah,
we gotta see our guys come through, Julio and Cal. That's all I want. I wanted to see this, see them in advance for the first time in my life.
you'll have T-Mobile buzzing tomorrow. T-Mobile will be buzzing tomorrow. It'll be great.
It'll be nice. It'll be fun. I'm excited. I mean, it sucked they didn't win it the other day, but if they do it at home, that's extra special.
Yeah. Well, let's reset here a little bit, because obviously playoff baseball has been kind of something I've been wanting to touch into, of course, and we'll dive into some of the local topics too, but I just wanted to touch at the top because one of the local guys, Aaron Judge, of course, saw his season come to a close last night. His Yankees falling, I believe, 5-2 to the Toronto Blue Jays last night in a four-game set, and, of course, it was – some would say competitive in the last two games. It was certainly not in the first two games, but Aaron Judge certainly having his moments, having his ability shown in this postseason, but it wasn't enough to get a victory. And so I write a question here at the top of the show is because we're getting into a territory with Judge, whereas you start to question how many more years of Judge do we get for his career, right, where we get this caliber of player, where he is doing things only Mantle and I think Jimmy Fox had ever done, which is lead the league in batting average and hit 50-plus homers. I asked the question today with the Yankees falling and the way the Yankees have played in that series, have the Yankees failed Judge so far, or have they failed him already with maybe the lack of ability to be focused in the field and these players making mental errors and not getting the runs across that they need to get into a winning position. Have the Yankees failed Aaron Judge? That's my big question at the top of the show, and I wonder what you guys think of that question in terms of it after another disappointing loss. The second longest postseason World Series drought for the Yankees ever in their franchise history now.
I hope it goes on forever.
What do you think, Timber?
I definitely think they did. I think that Judge putting out the performance that he did in these playoffs, I think he was batting above 500, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for him to be the crux of everybody saying that that's why the Yankees lost last year, and for him to come back and actually do what he did in this series and even the last series, I think he was just failed by the rest of his team. They couldn't sustain any rallies. I think the defensive performance was as poor as it was last postseason. You know, prime example, I know Jazz Chisholm just had a ball just go right through his hands at that. But I know it's a tough ball to get for sure. But, you know, these kind of things is what separates the great from the good. And however great Aaron Judge is, I think it's a whole systematic issue with the New York Yankees at this point where maybe not culture change, but something needs to happen where they need to buckle down on these scenarios, these issues that have been plaguing them for the last couple of years. Because they're certainly not the Yankees of yesteryear. You know, they just don't have that about them anymore.
Joe, what do you think? When I posed this question, did the Yankees fail Aaron Judge in the way they've performed, in the way they have set up this team? Is Aaron Judge going to go with a career without a World Series? Is that where we're projecting in terms of it? Because he is, I would say, arguably the best player of his generation. I know people would say Shohei, but I'm going to say it. Do you think the Yankees have failed Judge?
I think with Julio Rodriguez around, I say Aaron who? I don't know who that is. But obviously they failed him. I mean, you have amazing seasons. Everything Judge is doing is unbelievable, and for him to do it, you know, year after year, and what they're doing to him with these playoff exits, I mean, Boone, right? I mean, do you think this got to be it for Boone, right? I know they.
You would think so.
They extended him, didn't they, or something like that, or
yeah. We're not turning into Yankees Talk Radio. WFAN New York can certainly do that plenty, but it's just certainly not the George Steinbrenner Yankees, where George Steinbrenner is firing guys left and right in terms of everything.
Because
the World Series is the standard. That's right. The standard. If you fall short of it, you miss the standard.
And you know how those fans are and how rabid they are for that. Mm-hmm. And it's just surprising to me that he's still around. But
we are in the second longest World Series drought of Yankees history.
Yeah.
Tied for the second longest.
And like I said, I hope it lasts forever, but
of course I do.
Yeah, as a Red Sox fan, me as a Mariner fan who just hates seeing other teams constantly go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm just a hater with that. But, for sure, I think they have failed him, and I'm surprised Boone still has his job, and they got to do – I don't know. There's they've had pieces, you know, all the Garrett Cole and all that, and they just can't get it done. They just can't get any further than what they've gotten.
It just doesn't feel like there's a sense of urgency with the Yankees in terms of it. It seems like a sense of – we are good with what we have. Aaron Judge provides a lot of opportunity for people to be paying attention to our team. A lot of people are interested in our team, but the interest is dwindling in terms of whether you're putting a winning product out there. Frankly, they play, they play like a AAA, AA team in terms of defense out there. We've known it. We've seen it all throughout this season, the last couple seasons. Everybody knew last year when the Dodgers were playing, the Dodgers scouting report was put the ball in play.
Yep.
That's all you got to do. Put the ball in play and you'll beat the Yankees.
So do you think it started with Juan Soto leaving?
I don't think it started. I think it's a overall cultural failure of the Yankees in terms of where they put their priorities. And if you watch the Blue Jays last night, the Blue Jays aren't trying to swing for the fences,
nope.
Aren't trying to, make these big flashy things happen.
Vlad
they
is.
Put the ball in play. Vlad. Vlad can do what he wants in terms of it, and Vlad has every right to say what he wants to say in terms of it. But for a team that is now sitting here, we're not saying Judge is over the hill. I'm saying Judge is now on the back end of his prime. Is that – that is absolutely something fair to say, right?
He's
which is hard for me to believe.
Age. He's getting up there in his age already. I mean,
and we're waiting for the cliff to eventually fall for Aaron Judge, and that is something obviously fans here in the Central Valley don't want to hear, but it's the grim reality of it. Is you only get so many more chances, and we're facing a reality here where we have the greatest baseball player to ever come out of Fresno State, the greatest baseball player to be playing of his generation, not winning a World Series. could be one of the greatest travesties. And if that's going to be the case, then clearly the team has failed him to get into that situation. And I think they've had the pieces to win baseball games. It's just that they don't have the capability of understanding what the standard is to win football games. I don't think they respect baseball enough to win baseball games and win a World Series for him, because he's doing everything he can, but you just cannot do it with Volpe putting up like a fake bunt in terms of his at-bat and then swinging and missing like two strikes later in terms of it. Or, I don't know, Dominguez just total defensive lapse in left field in terms of it. And Stanton's just lumbering around at, 5 miles per hour out there in terms of how fast he can run to get to a baseball. Bellinger was a nice ad. I thought that was a decent one for them. But outside of it, I just don't know. Like, Goldschmidt doesn't do much for me in terms of it. He really had a big stalling out. The structure of this Yankees team is not set up to win, and they're kidding themselves if they think they have a long window here for one of the greatest ballplayers to ever wear their uniforms.
Their Mickey Mouse stadium matches their Mickey Mouse style playing. That's what I say.
Every Yankee great has won a World Series, and Judge might be the first one to not. And that's an indictment.
Crazy.
To think about all the pillars that have gone through that Yankee organization, and that is to no fault of his own.
He can come play for Seattle.
He almost played for San Francisco. And I wonder if that – I don't know if that would have changed anything, but at least it would have provided some different idea of where he could go. But let's be fair, that old regime that maybe would have signed Judge, I don't know what they would have put around him to make him any better of a situation. The Giants have kind of failed in their own right in terms of putting talent around where they had. And the details they pay attention to.
So you wrote it on the breakdown. How many more high-level years does he have?
How many high-level years? Like this kind of Judge year, how many years? Do we have two? Do we have three? Is there an injury year somewhere? Like, it's bound to happen. Like, your odds of that happening again to something we saw unprecedented with Aaron Judge this year, to say it's going to keep happening is insane to say. Now, we say that with, like, other great athletes like Brady, like Brady or LeBron. As Judge, like, in that category of can he sustain that level and be that guy, we don't know.
It's pre-Super Bowl Peyton over again, in my opinion. You know, you have all of these MVPs, all of these accolades, and you're just not able to get either the right scenario and where you are put in the best situation, or your team is not putting yourself in the best situation. And it comes in, year out, and when you have something like that, either you can go all in. And can we really say that they've been going all in? I feel like they did go all in with the Soto pickup last year.
Adding Fried was an all in. Cole losing Cole to a you know, Tommy John. That you can't plan that.
Yeah, exactly. So
I
just think that there needs to be a certain avenue now for the Yankees. Are you going to look at it and see, is this not working? How do we restructure the squad around Aaron Judge? Or what do they see in the future for this team? Because I honestly, I'm looking at the team, and I don't know where they go from here.
Can they
get that hump, get over that hump.
Can I bring up a player that I thought was great for the longest time and then started declining around this age, Judge's age, around 33, 34?
Yeah.
Miggy.
Go ahead.
Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera, yeah. Miguel Cabrera also didn't have any protection around him once he got to those years in terms of nobody being decent in the lineup in terms of it for it. So he had no protection to him. And the Yankees are not the Tigers in terms of where they're going to be. Like,
oh, no, not at all. I'm just saying as far as like the decline about the age and, you know, how great he was prior and stuff like that. Miggy was about
34. There are three athletes that come to mind where I think they never declined to – a level where it was a liability to their team, even into their 40s. And that was Bonds, that was Brady, that was LeBron.
Yeah.
That's just, and I don't know if Judge is one of those guys. We're going to find out. We're going to see. And I'm curious to see where it is. And if that's the case, then good for you, Yankees. But you can't be resting on that a little bit. I would imagine the hot stove and the hot seats are feeling really warm in New York today in terms of it. And frankly, I think it's deserved. I think it's absolutely deserved. I wouldn't, if I were a certain subsection of people rooting for that team, I wouldn't want Aaron Boone back. I wouldn't want any of those guys back in terms of the way they attack. You need to get back to George Steinbrenner just it's the standard is the standard in terms of it. So, all right, that's our opening topic for tonight. Of course, we've got all kinds of things to talk about. We'll get into high school football here next, talking about that. I haven't really had a chance to really break it down for a little bit. I've been away for a little bit, so I want to touch in on the high school season here next. Talk about some big high school news. Deacon Rose, ever heard of him? You're going to want to, as he is now flipped to Fresno State a couple days ago. We'll talk about that. So stay with us. We're just getting started here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Talking local now, we were covering the Aaron Judge conversation today after the Yankees were eliminated. Missed any of that, of course, you can go back and listen on demand as soon as our show is done on 1430ESPNFresno.com and 1430ESPN app. All right, so high school. Some big news, of course, coming over in the high school ranks involving Fresno State. And, of course, we'll talk about some of the high school stuff as well. First, I want to get into some games going on tonight. Seven games in the central section for people tonight in terms of it. Massive, massive game at McLean tonight in terms of league play, in terms of playoffs, all of that tonight. On the line is 6-0 McLean takes on 6-0 Roosevelt. Both teams been phenomenal this year. McLean, 300-plus points scored, only 17 given up all year from McLean High. Roosevelt, 200-plus points scored, only 47 points given up this year. So I would say the North Yosemite on the line in terms of who's winning that tonight between Roosevelt and McLean, so that should be a good one. Some other games of note: Fraser Mountain at Mojave. They're 3-4. Fraser Mountain is. Mojave is 2-4. That goes at 7 o'clock tonight. Legacy Christian Academy against Tehillah Christian Academy. Orosi, 5-1, rolling. Takes on Granite Hills tonight. Granite Hills, I believe, is a Visalia school, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, excuse me, Porterville School. Both teams 5-1. Look to win in some league play as well in that East Sequoia. I do believe both teams are 3-0 in that East Sequoia Football League. Both teams tied at 3-0 with Woodlake as well. Woodlake, the only lone totally undefeated team left in that league. So winner of this one certainly will look to keep pace with Woodlake for a league title. Dinuba, 3-3. They've been dangerous all year. They've been beating some good teams. Tulare Western, 5-1 tonight. Tulare Western hosting Dinuba should be a good one out at Tulare Western in that West Yosemite. Just checking the league standings right now. Western is 1-0, and they take on Dinuba, who is 0-1. Dinuba, 3-3 on the year overall, getting that one tonight. South is at East Bakersfield tonight, 1-5 versus 0-6. And then it's North at Tehachapi. Paul Metters likes to point out to me all the time when he talks about Tehachapi of how high the grass they grow at Tehachapi. And it is as true of a home field advantage in Tehachapi as anything. I don't know how, if you ever played schools before, Tim Veer, where they grow the grass just a little bit more just to make it frustrating for other teams. Have you ever experienced that before?
Yeah, you know, in soccer especially, like, the ball will drag, and so you're trying to adjust passing lanes and how much you should put on it. And I can, you know, see that for football as well, right? Like, you're trying to run, you're trying to be able to cut, and it's just a little bit harder. It's like quicksand, basically, to you. But, hey, it's a advantage to Tehachapi for sure, and that's why they do it.
Certainly. So Tehachapi back at it tonight as they take on North of Bakersfield. Some other notables tomorrow, just real quick. Clovis North at Clovis. We'll get to that. Clovis High in a hot second. Clovis West is at Buchanan tonight. All these teams 5-1. Clovis East looking to bounce back. They have Central East. That is a tall task. We'll see how it goes there. St. Joe's hosting Paso Robles. Liberty Madera is ranked. They're 6-0. They go up against Minarets tomorrow, who is also 6-0. So that is probably for a league title or the inside track for a league title between Liberty and Minarets, the Mustangs. Liberty's 2-0 in league. Minarets 3-0 in this league. So that will be a massive one to bookmark as well. Bakersfield Christian 6-0. They're at Highland. They should be able to handle them. Frontier is at Liberty tomorrow. 2-4 Frontier, 1-5 Liberty. Liberty's running out of chances to win football games, and they desperately need one at home against their rivals, Frontier. So I wonder what desperation Liberty will have, because if they miss the playoffs, that is
shocking.
That's going to be shocking. If Liberty High out of Bakersfield misses the playoffs, people are not going to be used to that. Menachie's at Redwood. Menachie 5-1, sneaky, taking on a Redwood team who is – ranked in the top 10 in the Central Section, according to Max Preps. You got Bullard and Madera tomorrow. Madera 5-1, a decent run game for them. Garces Memorial, sneaky 5-1, taking on Stockdale. Washko's at Kennedy tomorrow. Both teams are 5-1. Centennial is at Bakersfield High. Bakersfield High should roll in that one, 5-1 versus 1-5. Delano at Shafter. Shafter coming off a loss a couple weeks ago. Both 5-1 teams. Kerman's at Reedley. Reedley 5-1, still rolling. Those Pirates, after their loss to Orosi, they've been able to beat everybody else. We'll be at Justin Garza and Sanger tomorrow. Sanger's 3-3, looking to avoid falling below 500. Justin Garza, a team in that CMAC that has been competitive, to say the least. See if I can get that CMAC standings up real quick. Yes, Sanger right now 1-0, Garza 1-0. So inside track potential in that one in terms of CMAC play. Hanford's at Tulare Union. That should be a massive one as well. And then Golden West rolling 6-0 at Porterville tomorrow as well. That's a big one as they look to stay undefeated. Just a few undefeated teams left. That's it.
Yep.
So undefeated seasons are coming hard to find here in terms of that. So, Tanvir, let's talk about the big high school news of the week so far. And that has been the decommitment of Deegan Rose to Oregon State and now the commitment to Fresno State. Same day, Fresno State able to flip Deegan Rose, quarterback. I was listening to Jackson a little bit before coming in. Sounds like a very crowded quarterback room in terms of Fresno State, but you don't care when you get a guy who is a point shy from being a four-star recruit and being the highest recruit since Derek Carr. You go and snag him if you have the opportunity to do so. It's a move. It's certainly a move in the recruiting sense that validates what this Fresno State staff is doing. It's one that certainly validates the process of Valley kids can play in the Valley for Fresno State, but I wonder what the trickle-down effect could be of this recruiting commitment can be, certainly, for the Valley. But overall, I think this is just a fascinating development to see what happened. And Fresno State, of course, I think benefiting from maybe the dysfunction of what Oregon State has provided. If Oregon State was 5-1 and kind of rolling through this season, we'd have a – I don't think we'd be having this conversation. But
right.
Fresno State found an opportunity, they found a window, and they took advantage of it.
No, I agreed, and I think that Deegan is the kind of guy that Fresno State is kind of looking for. You know, to me, what I've seen out of him, he's very accurate, very good. You know, just being able to distribute the ball to this multitude of receivers. It's not like, you know, you hyper target and you can see like, okay, we can see the receiver is doing a lot of the work. No, this guy is going out there and slinging the ball around to multiple different guys. I love what I've seen out of him. You know, just looking over some of his season stats, because I am going to the game against Clovis North, so just, you know, researching some stuff. This guy's got 71% completion percentage this season in high school. 1,519 passing yards and 14 TDs with no interceptions. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I like, where we have a lot of these quarterbacks that are very, very good in track, but the ability to not turn the ball over with how he's done is very impressive. So I like what Fresno State is getting from a Fresno State perspective. I really do like that. And for Deegan to stay in the Central Valley – I think that's a testament to, as you said, Central Valley kids staying in the Valley and playing for Fresno State is something that I think we need to start getting back to on a more regular basis. And, yeah, I like what I – overall this whole thing for this program.
He's the number two, rated Central Valley prospect, just below Israel Briggs, I believe, his teammate, who's going to Miami, I believe, at a linebacker position. So, and he is the highest-level recruit since Derek Carr to come to Fresno State in terms of it as well.
Good reason.
Yeah. I would encourage anybody who has nothing to do on a Friday night to go watch Clovis football. I think I would imagine there may be a little bump for the Fresno State fans to go check it out in terms of it. But I think what this is about, what Coach Entz has been setting out to find in his coaching tenure here, certainly to entrench themselves in the Valley, certainly to say they are here for the long haul in terms of it. And you never know when opportunities present themselves for other coaches when things are going well. But 5-1 is 5-1. It certainly tells a lot about the message that Coach Entz is providing for a guy who's come into the Valley, who has no Valley ties, no ties of talking to Deegan Rose before. He's been committed since, like, before I even got here. Deegan Rose was maybe even to his sophomore season of playing football for the Oregon State Beavers. So to flip that deep of a commitment is fascinating to me, to show that you can come in and really validate and sell what you are showing in terms of what your program can be moving forward. This year has benefited from it. And frankly, I think of a quarterback like Deegan who can stand tall in the pocket like that, and you imagine him inserted into the Fresno State office that we currently see. And I'm saying EJ's not doing the job, but I'm saying that he's a little bit taller than EJ, and he's a little bit stronger than EJ, and wondering what the arm strength can look like, in terms of it. No knock on EJ. EJ's EJ, and Deegan's Deegan.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you sit there and kind of think about, like, wow, the possibilities there in terms of that and what I'm seeing and what we're seeing in, like, a Josh Davis offense so far with a solid running game, and not just solid, great running game, and what that can present. Do you think about that sometimes when it comes to what Deegan can insert into?
No, for sure. Like, just when we first asked this question, I really did think about it from the perspective of, like, what would he look in this offense? And I truly do think that his skill set is going to maximize his potential in this offense. Now, obviously, that's all down to how he transforms himself throughout this process into Fresno State, and how he works through everything that he needs to when he is at Fresno State. But the potential is there for sure, and you see that every time he plays football. And I think Fresno State was really looking for a guy like Deegan, and now that he's committed, I think that he will definitely provide that ceiling that Fresno State has been looking for a while.
It'll be probably a couple of years. People are not
right.
I want to say this. Don't expect Deegan Rose to start week one next year.
And that's where I was talking. He needs to work through everything, and then once he is there, possibly he will be able to provide.
I saw
a lot
of tweets that say, "Coming to Valley Children's Stadium 2026. I'm like, all right, hold on. Come on. True freshman starting at the college level is pretty insane if you get to it. But
especially these days.
Derek Carr didn't even start his freshman year. He started sophomore season. That's the trajectory you kind of hope. The three-year Derek Carr kind of career in terms of it. You hate to see NIL come in if that's the possibility of it. But if he's playing that good, money will talk. It certainly was. And we want the best for our Central Valley athletes regardless, right? Anyways, fascinating development, like I said. On the flip side, on the short term, like, do we see a bump in Deegan's play? Do we see a bump in Clovis's play now that this decision is come and gone and everybody's been speculating in terms of that? And is Clovis still a team that can be capable of winning a track title, winning a Division I AA title? I know people hear the name and say, well, certainly they got to have the best team, right, in the Central Valley. But then Central's got obviously a lot to say. And I want to say that before I get into my next question, I want to say congratulations to Brandon Smith of Central East for being our ESPN Student Athlete of the Week for this week. Had a fantastic game against Clovis North last Thursday.
Yep.
We haven't been able to get a chance to interview him. Just timing did not work out for us to be able to get him interviewed, but hopefully we'll get him down the stretch here of the season. So congrats to Brandon Smith for winning our Student Athlete of the Week. When you sit there and think about what you've seen so far from this season, is it separated now between these two teams? And I know Clovis East and Clovis West just had a big-time battle and everything like that, but it really now still feels like these are the two teams to beat, and the others certainly are just a step below in terms of that in the track.
I think going into last week, I had a much more kind of even look at all of these track teams. But with Central East doing what they did to North, who I thought, they are an impressive team. They're a really good team. And for Central East to still do what they did, obviously, you know, rain comes into play, but they're able to take care of business against North. And that really, to me, is where they've kind of separated themselves, in my opinion, with that trio that they have in the quarterback, running back. Well, they actually have two really good wide receivers as well. So I think Central has kind of been, if I had to just say it, I think Central is the best team so far. But Clovis High right behind them. I really like Clovis High's defensive line. I really think Clovis High's offense is multiple. They can attack you in many different ways. They got two good tight ends. They got a good running game. And I think that those two teams for sure are my two front runners to kind of win at the end of this season. But North still, to me, is a really good team, and I think watching out for them is crucial. So
I wonder if they just didn't match up well against Central East.
No, for sure.
And sometimes people just forget that matchups matter in football a lot, and how you just go up against a team. We saw it the last couple of weeks with Fresno State when they go up against Hawaii and Nevada. Two very strong defensive lines against our offensive line that is currently down two starters. You know, it's just like sometimes that can just keep things closer than you would like to feel comfortable with, some teams exploit it. And it feels like Central is just a vastly athletic team that can really just stretch you out in terms of it. And I didn't know if Clovis North had, like, the speed to match in terms of it. And certainly they got disrupted in that game on Thursday. So, but I wonder if in a more traditional sense with Clovis, who does have athletes, like we saw Carlos Young just moss people literally on ESPN last week in terms of it. But I wonder if, in a more traditional sense, Clovis North looks itself in the mirror and sees Clovis play, and they're kind of like, we can do what they do a little bit. We just hope that we can, not get destroyed by that defensive line that Clovis has in terms of it. But I wonder if that's going to be a closer game for North this Friday.
Yeah. No, and I definitely think that this will be a closer game. I think both of these teams match up really well against each other. It's a lot of strength against strength. And coming out of this game, I think I'll have a more clear view on who I really see has kind of separated themselves out of these three teams. But I definitely think that North's running game needs to be a sense of urgency in this game, as it has been in weeks past. And if they are able to get that going against this really good defensive line, then I definitely see them having a shot to win this game. But Clovis D-line, again, as I stated before, they can disrupt people. And if they're stopping you regularly, I think it's really hard to stop Deegan Rose on a consistent basis on the other end of the offense.
You were there last week with Clovis East and Clovis West.
Yeah.
What makes Clovis East defense like so stout? Like Clovis East and the Timberwolves, even though they did give up the points at the end, I hear so much about it. Is it just a talent thing? Is it just athleticism? Is it a scheme thing? Like what stands out from the Clovis
East? It's a little bit of mix. I mean, obviously it's a little bit of mix of everything, but I really like they have an athletic front seven. I think that these guys are running sideline to sideline very well, and when you are able to contain any athletic quarterback to inside the pocket, especially here in the high school level, and you're forcing them to test your secondary, I think anytime that can happen, that can win. I think they had five sacks last week.
Yeah.
And yes, they did let those four touchdowns through, but that's also we have to start scoring some points. Let's start airing it out. Let's start testing the secondary. And that's kind of what I saw happen at the end of that game, along with the offense not being able to supplement in that second half. But this Clovis East front seven is really athletic. They're able to get to the quarterback. It's not like they're just pressuring and they're just not getting there. But yeah, that I really do like this Club's East front seven.
I wonder, and you mentioned, sorry to interrupt, but I wonder with what Central East presents, yeah. I wonder if this is Central's like toughest matchup in terms of the defense versus the offense. I know the Athletic wide receivers matching up in the secondary, they got a win there in terms of it, but it's like if they can't get Brandon Smith rolling a little bit because the front seven you say is so strong, maybe that could cause Central to get off schedule in terms of their offense just a little bit, and maybe that opens just things up a little bit for Clovis East. I'm fascinated by that game on Friday.
Yeah, I definitely am too, and I think I'm also fascinated from the aspect that this was last year's track champion or a CIF Central Section championship, and how both teams are going to respond to that in their first game playing against each other since that. I think that Central East, I think the passing game is the test that Clovis East has to kind of counter with. Like, yes, they are able to have an athletic front seven, but if their secondary is playing up to snuff against this really good receiving core, I think you can really see some type of tough matchup in this game. But if Clovis East can't really stop that passing game, I think it's going to be a tough outing for him.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
Tomorrow's going to be great to watch some of these games, certainly, but we'll be looking forward to it. All right, let's take a break. We're overdue for one. We'll wrap up this hour next. So stay with us. We'll continue on with the show here next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Behind the bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, Valley's local sports leader. All right, wrapping up this first hour, and we're going to talk a little injury bug. Brought to you, injury report brought to you by Davis and Van Wagenen Injury Law Firms. Be sure to call my friends at Davis and Van Wagenen Injury Law Firms today. They don't win if you don't win, so be sure to get him a call in any injury situation you need. All right, injury report, taking a look at some of the injury news that's been around the NFL. We just had a breaking injury news for tonight's game. Jalen Carter, who was added to the injury report Wednesday due to a heel injury, is inactive for tonight's game against the Giants. Does it make you pause a little bit about tonight's game in terms of the Giants' chances with Jalen Carter out? A little bit, Tamir?
I think when we saw Jalen Carter not be inserted into the lineup in that week one matchup against the Cowboys, we really saw it did affect their run-stopping ability. And when you have a running back like Cam Scadaboo on New York side of things that can out-physical you, especially between the tackles, I think it could present something. Now, obviously, I think Dallas's offense is better than New York's offense. And so with the lack of wide receivers as well on the New York side of things, I think it could be little iffy, but I'm gonna say that this is not necessarily gonna affect them like it did in the Cowboys game, but it should be something to look out for.
Well, not just the running back position, but Jackson Dart likes to run up the middle a little bit too, and you could see those gaps wide open just a little bit more in terms of it. So Xavier Worthy did not practice today for the Chiefs. Also, Terry McLaurin not practicing, but back to Xavier Worthy, who seemed to be shaken up at some point in the Monday night game a little bit.
Yeah.
I hate to call it like an injury bug season for Xavier Worthy, but it might be one of those situations where the Chiefs, who I think will feel inclined to maybe just have Xavier Worthy get right, because Rashee Rice is coming back, not this week, but the next. And they have the bye somewhere in there as well. I wonder if it is time for the Chiefs to kind of shut him down for a little bit and get him totally 100% just based off of what his nagging injuries have been. So, but do you feel like the Chiefs have been a little desperate playing Xavier Worthy the way they have this season?
I think the way that their season is going, it's clearly been like that, right? You have a team that's been consistently winning, and now they're sitting at, 2-3?
Staring 2-4 in the
face. Staring 2-4 because they're playing Detroit this weekend. I think that that's clearly the reason why they have been playing him. It is a little bit unfortunate how he got injured again this week. I don't know where their bye week lands, but if it's
week 9, I think.
Okay.
I
So I think Rashee Rice can definitely supplement them in the time being. I think it all depends on where they are and what they're looking at schedule-wise, because I know Detroit's a tough game. I think they do have another tough game right after this.
They got Washington coming up in the docket.
Yeah,
so. I think they have Buffalo before the bye as well.
Yeah, so there is a tough stretch. I think that maybe resting them this one game and then coming right back out the next game after that might be the move. For the Chiefs.
Finally, Brock Purdy not practicing again today with his turf toe. Sounds like Mac Jones on track to start. Although Mac added another injury, I think he had some sort of oblique thing going on top of his knee thing going on. So we'll see what that all stands in terms of. Do we think Mac survives this Tampa game? Or
Survives is a tough word to say for this. I think it's the proper move to rest Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
I think that winning that game even gives you even more credence to bench him, because you're still three games above 500 and you're sitting at either four games above with a win or two games above with a loss. So I think this is the right move. I think Mac will be fine.
Well, there is the injury report. Just checking on some of the league injuries from around the league there. Injury report by Davis and Van Wagenen, injury law for you there as well. All right, we're going to end the hour here. We got another hour to go, and we got plenty to talk about, some Fresno State talk. What's going on in the Dodger game? That's over on 790 right now. We'll give you an up-to-the-minute date update on that one from L.A. Benatti Blitz is coming up next as well, so plenty in this second hour next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Benatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Live on this Thursday afternoon. Good to be here for another edition. One more hour before you send it off to Thursday Night Football. It is the show at Fashion Furniture, as they always do here on these Thursdays. By the way, just a reminder, we have Me and Ed's Pizza sitting to our right here. Our stage right, is that what it is? I don't know exactly how to describe it, with the people who are watching on the live stream. So to my right, to the people's left who are watching the live stream. Stage left, I think that's what you call it.
Yep.
But pizza's here, courtesy of Me and Ed's. Thank you to Me and Ed's. A reminder, it's the 65th anniversary celebration of Fashion Furniture, which continues here. It's going to be a big day, Friday, October 17th at 5 p.m. Mark your calendars, people. Friday, October 17th at 5 p.m. We've got Mayor Jerry Dyer, who's going to be cutting a ribbon. The Fresno Chamber of Commerce will be serving appetizers, and the Fresno State Pep Band will entertain the crowd during the $50,000 free furniture raffle. That's right. You have a chance to win $50,000 worth of free furniture. David, what could you do with $50,000 of free furniture? What are you upgrading in your spot with some fashion furniture items?
Maybe a sofa for sure.
Yeah.
Dude, maybe some kitchen tables.
We're going to go sit at a sofa after this, and you're going to see.
Am I going to freak out?
Yeah, you're going to freak out later in this show. We're going to do the Benatti Blitz from there, by the way.
Oh, beautiful.
So, Reinder, they're going to all sign the Fresno State fight song as well, and you are singing the fight song as well. You're invited to enter. There's no cost besides, and they're going to need help eating. How about a 65-foot anniversary cake as well?
Jeez.
65 feet of cake is going to be here. Friday, October 17th at 5 p.m. here at Fashion Furniture. Nothing like it in all of California. Update on the Dodgers game. I think no score going to the bottom of the fourth right now. Tanvir, any notable updates? You've been paying attention to some of the game. Seemed like the Dodgers were in a situation where they could have driven in a run, but didn't capitalize in the bottom of the third.
Yeah, so Ohtani got a single, and he was able to get runners on the corners at first and third. Betts had a good swing at it. Looked like it was about to go through the first baseman's glove, but first baseman got it, they get to switch the play. So Phillies, I think, are at bat at this point while the game is 0-0.
Dodgers are at bat. By the way, Christopher Sanchez, just 31 pitches through three innings right now.
He's cooking.
Dodgers, him and Glasnow are currently
playing really well.
Working really well.
Yep.
For both these teams, which would, I think, personally, as a baseball fan, I would like to see both of these teams go at it game five with a full-fledged bullpen potentially available after a day's rest. So, as a baseball fan, I think I'd root Phillies here. Just to see what it would look like with Ohtani versus, I believe, Jesus Luzardo in terms of it as well. So we'll see. We'll see. It all will play out as we go. all right, I want to just touch on Fresno State real quick. And, of course, we touched on the Monday performance review of them against Nevada. We don't need to touch on it too much. They go up against Colorado State. Our week's a little expedited because the game is going to be on Friday, not Saturday. So our usual previewing is going to be a little bit abbreviated in terms of it. But I find it fascinating that this Bulldogs team, who was barely getting to bowl eligibility, the idea, by the way, that the Bulldogs can be bowl eligible again for a second year in a row by beating Colorado State is fascinating to me. If you think about that kind of scheduling quirk in terms of it, almost feels ordained. But this certainly feels like a game that the Bulldogs have a clear advantage in, but it is college football and weird things happen. Level of 1 to 10 for you, Tim Veer, where are you at in the comfort level of a game tomorrow against Colorado State on the road?
I think after last week's game, I'm going to say, in terms of comfortability, I'm going to say like a 7.
Okay.
I think that these are the type of games that I've always seen Fresno State somehow find a way to not be able to put the game away, right? Like, you have this opportunity in front of you with a team that you should be able to beat, and I certainly think that this is another aspect of that where Colorado State, you are going on the road, but this is a game that you should win. You are favored by 6.5. And putting, you know, the nail in the coffin at that point is something that needs to be a regular occurrence, in my opinion, when it is Fresno State. And obviously it is tougher being done than said.
Yeah.
Right? So we'll see how it works out. But I'm going to say it's a 7. I still think the Fresno State's a better team. But I have hesitancy in terms of the fact that it's on the road and it's a team that, you know, Fresno State should be able to wash.
I had to make a mention of it in terms of just I mentioned it in the high school segment, last segment, games about matchups, football's about matchups, where you match up well versus what you don't match up well with. And I said it on Monday, Nevada's strength was our weakness versus our weakness was as glaring of a mismatch as you could have, and Nevada benefited from it by keeping it close because they were exploiting the one thing we couldn't really have an answer for, which was offensive line situation versus a pass rush that was pretty ferocious and kept our team, outside of a 68-yard run from Rayshon Luke, our team very subsided. I remember just taking note of the statistic, minus 11 rushing yards in the second half before that final drive. Before it did end up being something around 39 yards rushing total in the second half. But this will not be the case this week. I feel wholeheartedly confident in the idea that we can run the football again back to where we need to go. It sounded like Braden Walton was coach mentioned it in his presser this Monday. It sounded like Braden Walton could have gone in an emergency situation for the Bulldogs in the line, but he decided to suit him up just in an emergency situation, but to not play him, give him 72 hours more rest. It sounded like that's what he needed in terms of rest. And now we are beyond the 72-hour threshold of last Saturday, and the Bulldogs are back a starter on the offensive line, which I think is absolutely something that's going to change the outlook of what this offense has been able to do. I have been dying for a complete game. We have not had one. I don't think we've had a complete total dominant performance outside of Southern, and I'm not going to count it because Southern is Southern. You know what I mean? So we have not had a turnover-free football game yet, including the Southern game. We've had turnovers in every single game on the offensive side. Bold predictions or not, I don't know if you can count them. I don't think we turn the ball over, and I think we do put together four complete quarters of offensive football on on our team, because I do believe that the Bulldogs can run the football, go seven, eight minutes per drive, and really just put the foot down in terms of a way this game can go. But it's a Friday, and it's a road game, and it's a game in a situation that's a little bit unusual in terms of the spot it is in. But I don't know if that necessarily means that things are going to get weird. Running the football should be as rudimentary of a thing you can do. You could pick it up on a Wednesday and play a game and run the football effectively. It's not like complex passing schemes where you have to make sure things are happening and guys are in the perfect spot and the quarterback's making sure they get to a certain spot. Running the football should be as rudimentary as anything. And I think the Bulldogs are going to run the football like 40 times on Friday tomorrow. So that's how I feel. I'm weirdly confident. I feel like I should say I'm weirdly confident. I'm very confident in this football game tomorrow, and that's how I see it. And I hate to have expectations, high expectations sometimes, because I'm the guy who likes to temper them, but I don't see how it could go any other way on the game on Friday.
Yeah, agreed. And that's always where you get into that situation where maybe you're saying a bit much, but I think you're saying correct things at this point.
300 yards rushing against San Diego State last week did San Diego State put up.
And I think that this Fresno State running game is going to be humming. I also think that this Fresno State passing game has an opportunity to really start putting together drives that have a lot of yardage behind them. You know, we saw Josiah Freeman have two touchdowns last week, and I think this is he could be in store for a big game. Yeah, it's not the calling card of this offense per se, but you know, you have a Colorado State passing offense that passing defense that is not that good, and you have the ability to open it up. And if that running game is working, you could see a couple of big plays from this passing game in this specific game. So we'll see how it goes. I think both sides of that offense has an opportunity to really put a mark in this game. And we're going to see tomorrow which side of the ball is really humming, because I think it all starts with that running game.
Do we not turn the ball over tomorrow?
I think they don't.
Is this finally the game?
I think they don't. I think this is finally the game that they don't find. I think we're going to see a clean game from this Fresno State offense, because I think it's just not in – I think that this offense will be able to put together drives on end.
Well, I also don't think Colorado State is very good at turning people over, right, as well. No. I think they're one of the worst teams at it. On the other side, it's going to be a conservative team on offense. They are going to not risk a lot in terms of it. I said this last year in terms of their offense, and I know what Coach Norvell is all about in terms of the way they play, and they did not risk things down the field with Braden Fowler Nicolosi last year, and that got him in trouble and allowed Fresno State to really take a big 28-7 lead. And once you take a lead on Colorado State, I think it's donezo. I think it's over in terms of it. I don't see them coming back in any certain deficit. So Bulldogs just got to jump out to a 14-point lead. They got to jump out to a double-digit lead, and it feels like it could be theirs. They're not going to win. Colorado State's not going to win the football game by having Jackson Broso throw the football around. I'm reading a stat here. He's only 1 of 10 on deep shots with Broso as well. So they're not going to go deep in terms of it as far as explosive plays. So you can feel confident that they are not going to take those chances, and then you can really gamble as a defense in terms of where you can dial up pressures, where you can dial up gap coverage. I think Jaden Pearson's going to have another monster game in this one in terms of it, like he's had over the last few games. He was my player of the game last week for Fresno State against Nevada.
A guy that we thought would have a massive game last week. So, you know, him playing up to the level that he's been playing this year, I think it's been very impressive.
Yeah. I love me some. Is it Ryan Wilson? I love he destroyed two receivers last week, by the way. I don't know if you saw those two plays. He absolutely destroyed two guys over the middle. Nobody's going to want to run in Ryan Wilson's territory in terms of it as a safety position. The Bulldogs, four more turnovers last week, all in the first half, by the way, in two quarters of play. People are like, well, I didn't really do much in the second half. I'm like, you're not supposed to ask for more turnovers after four. I'm sure the defense certainly would want to do that. But, I both sides of the ball, we match up so good against this Colorado State team. I just don't see a reason why this shouldn't go any certain way. That gets us in trouble, I know. And if we're sitting here and it's like a 26-19 win, it was like a gutted out, like had to have it performance. I don't know. I don't know what I'd say about that. But thank God we'd be bowl eligible with that win. But yeah, just both sides of the ball should absolutely be flying tomorrow.
I think one area that Colorado State can have some success in is in the running game. I think I've seen a lot of good out of Jalen Dupree, their running back, 69 carries for 370 yards. But saying that, Fresno State's run defense has been pretty good this year. So
yes.
I think that'll be the hinge point. If Colorado State is to have some sort of advantage, it's through that. I just think that the Fresno State rush defense has been good, and in this instance, their positive is going against our positive as well. So we'll see how that turns out for them.
You won't be on the show tomorrow, so do you have a score prediction tomorrow in terms of what the Bulldogs will do?
I think Fresno State. I think it'll be close for a little bit, but they'll start pulling away by games. And I'm going to say that Fresno State wins this game 27-17.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I wrote in Barkboard 31-10.
Okay.
31-10. By the way, I had another week in a row where I guessed the opponent's score correct. I said 38.
Tony's going to come to you once again.
I said 38-17 when we beat Nevada.
Yeah.
Or no, 34-17. I was a little irritated, by the way, last week because Fresno State, they just – I know they were certainly – they can certainly take their time on their offensive side. I wanted a big bang play in terms of it and give me a couple touchdowns, but it was not to be in terms of it. All right. Cool. Well, let's take another break. We're going to relook it here, and we're going to attempt to do so with all of what's going on. We got a couch to go sit on. Next in this segment, we're going to be doing the Benatti Blitz when we're picking all 15 games of Week 6 here coming up next. So let's take a break, and when we come back, you're going to want to tune into the live stream. It's going to be funny to look at. So stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. If you're watching on the live stream, you're seeing a very funny visual. Joe, Joe is the producer. I would recommend you going to check out our YouTube page right now because we are sitting in the John Michael Designs LA, the Big Buddy couch. This thing makes me look like I'm 5'6". Tanvir, how are you feeling?
I'm comfortable in here.
I can't even see you. There's too many pillows to my right. I just hear you in terms of it. Joe, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I haven't looked at the thing yet because I only got one screen.
Oh, man. All right. Well, if you ever get a chance to look back at what we're doing here, get a chance because this is a hilarious couch. It's sectional like you've never seen before. It's huge. You got angel cloud seating. Did we mention it's huge? Luxury at its finest, comfort at its finest. Through November 20th, get a free fabric upgrade on any John Michael Designs order. And there's free financing available. Tanvir, if you won that $50,000 free furniture, is this one of the options?
This might be the one.
This might be the one in terms of it. Okay, so good to be here. We are starting the music in a moment here, Joe, but I want to mention we're going to do the Benatti Blitz brought to you by Grocery Outlet. Grocery Outlet, of course, a big part of our Tailgate Ready contest. If you want to be tailgate ready this season with the Fresno State Bulldogs, be sure to sign up at our participating grocery outlets for the Tailgate Ready contest. That is at Southeast Fresno, Downtown Fresno, Northwest Fresno, Kerman, and Sanger. So you get a chance to win two tickets to a Fresno State game and $100 towards your tailgate, all courtesy of your local grocery outlets who are participating in the Tailgate Ready contest. Three winners yet to be picked, three home games left, so you still got time to enter into that contest. So that is the Benatti Blitz brought to you by Grocery Outlet. All right, Joe, get the music queued up. Let's get ready to roll. Oh, yeah. I'll save Thursday for the last segment. We're going to save Thursday. So we're going to go straight to the top of week six. Plenty of games to pick here, and we start in London. The Denver Broncos take on the New York Jets, a Jets team who is winless, a Jets team who has no takeaways through five games, a NFL historic pace that they are certainly on. Denver Broncos' signature win that they just came off of against Philadelphia. Of course, we'll see if they can back it up. Usually letdowns happen after that, but nobody's letting anybody down except for this Jets team against their fan base. So give me the Denver Broncos to win over the New York Jets in London. Tanvir?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Denver Broncos will win this game. I think they had a massive win against the Philadelphia Eagles. Really showed their defensive prowess. And I think for a Jets team that can't really stop much, as we saw in the Dallas game, I think their offense, the Broncos' offense, will start doing something. So give me the Broncos in this one as well.
Joe, who do you got?
I mean, it's kind of obvious. Broncos.
Broncos all day. Broncos are 7-point favorites in London. Next up, got the Rams and the Ravens in Baltimore. And boy, we thought this was going to be one of the best games of the year in terms of anticipation. Boy, has it not lived up to that potential. Lamar Jackson looks to be missing this one again in terms of injury. So the Rams are set up nicely here, right? Certainly no letdown potential in this one. The Ravens can't stop a cold in any sense of the word. They're a 7.5-point underdog at home. It could get a little rainy on the East Coast. Could that affect certain things for the Rams in terms of it? But nobody's better in setting up their team on the East Coast games than Sean McVay. I have no doubt the Rams can take care of business after a loss to the 49ers in a long week and a pseudo bye that they will beat the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, for a Los Angeles Rams team that has a lot of prowess in the air, this is they're going up against a secondary that has allowed the most passing TDs in the league with 13. I think this is going to be a big game out of Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams. But this is also a Ravens defense that can't stop the run. So I think all of the Rams' weapons start cooking in this one. Give me the Rams.
What do you got, Joe?
I mean, the Rams should – I mean, these should be gimme games, both of those first two, the Broncos and the Rams. I mean, if the Rams don't do this, I don't even know. I've already given up on football because my Dolphins are disappointed. But I don't even know. The Rams should take that.
Oh, we'll get to your Dolphins. Next up, the Cowboys and the Panthers. This build is the best game on Fox. I've been seeing all these promos on all the baseball games. That's the game of the week for them. The Cowboys 2-2-1 after their win last week over those New York Jets. The Panthers finding a way, certainly at home. 2-0 at home. Are the Panthers a better team at home taking on this Cowboys team who certainly would love to outscore every opponent they play? Cowboys only a 3-point favorite. Something sneaky tells me this game's going to be that close, despite what Bryce Young loves to do in the first half of these football games. I'll ride the Cowboys, though. I think they're just a little bit better. Give me a high-scoring affair with the Cowboys winning over Carolina.
Yeah, I think if the Cowboys start losing this game in any aspect, I think they can really get affected by Rico Dowdle in that run game. Rico Dowdle has a little bit of a revenge game on his mind after the great performance that he did, but I think the Cowboys are going to win this game. I saw Jalen Waddle really play really well against them last week. Darren Waller, I thought, played really well, and I think this Cowboys passing offense is just going to be too much. So give me the Cowboys.
Come on. I mean, the Panthers just beat up on the Dolphins, so I think the Panthers are going to win this one, obviously.
Okay. I mean,
Panthers going to take this. I know he's Rico Dotto, but I call him Rico Doodle. Rico Doodle. I'm guessing another 150-yard game. I think Panthers are taking it.
All right. Next up, we go to Indy, the one seed, Indianapolis Colts at 4-1, taking on the Cardiac Cardinals, who certainly find ways to lose and find ways to win this season. Cardinals on a three-game losing streak certainly could possibly not have Kyler in this game. That certainly affects things. Seems to be trending towards a possible blowout if the Cardinals don't have their whole starting cast. I thought it would be a little closer, a little more interesting than people think, but Indy's rolling. Indy's playing great defense. Indy's playing great in the run game as well. I certainly don't see this game derailing their season. So give me the Indianapolis Colts to be 5-1.
I'm right there with you in lockstep. I think the Indianapolis Colts, they've been the offensive juggernauts this year. Defensively, they've still been pretty good. And, you know, I think this Cardinals team, with a loss like they did last week, I think they're going to need a lot to kind of get back into the right state of mind. So, yeah, give me the Indianapolis Colts in this game.
What a disappointment the Cardinals are. I really thought the Cardinals were going to be in the Niners' position, you know, 4-1, whatever it is, 5-1, but they're so disappointing. No Kyler, they're not going to do anything, sadly. Danny Dimes all day.
Indiana Jones all day. Next up, Seattle at Jacksonville. The Jaguars have had their heads inflated by the national media over the last 4 days since they beat the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football. Yours truly picked them, by the way. Only one to do it on Monday's show. Anyways, the Jaguars are playing good football. They're obviously turning the ball over a lot for some people on the defensive side. Sam Darnold's been a little bit of a turnover-prone kind of quarterback lately these last few games for Seattle in that big shootout against Tampa. Key turnover late that really caused Seattle to lose that football game. Seattle's offense plays very good football as well, though. So I am flipping a coin here. To me, I think Jacksonville just has a little bit more offensively to get it by the Seattle Seahawks team. But I would not be surprised if it goes the other way. But I'm gonna put my foot down and go Jacksonville here.
Jacksonville's been a juggernaut on defense. They have turned the opposing team over in every single game. And I think that the one thing that Seattle can be a little bit susceptible to is some turnovers. I honestly think that this is going to be a very low-scoring game because both defenses are really good. But I think the difference maker, I think Greg Newsome, this new trade that they just got, I think he'll be matched up with Jackson Smith and Jigba, and I think you'll see the greatness of Greg Newsome in that game. I'm not going to say he's going to lock him up or anything, but I think this will be a game where JSN might have a little bit of a tough struggle. So give me the Jacksonville Jaguars to win, as I did last week. So, all right.
In my opinion, Jacksonville's a little overrated. I think out of all those, what is it, one-loss teams, I think Jacksonville's the worst one. I like their defense, what they're doing on defense, obviously. It's amazing, like three turnovers a game. But I think their offense is a fluke. I don't like what Trevor Lawrence is doing. They do work with Etienne, and then he disappears. So I think Seattle, a well-coached team. I like what Darnold's doing. I think they'll beat him. I think Seattle takes it.
Next up, Chargers at Dolphins in Miami. The Chargers are a injury firm, dying to find any healthy player that wants to play the line or running back for them. I wonder if that issue could be persistent in this game against Miami. Miami does one thing well. They have good pass rushers, and I wonder if that could be an issue for this Chargers team who has an issue with the line that they have. Washington created issues with them. Miami certainly finding ways to score the football in terms of it, and I'm not saying this Charger defense is starting to lax a little bit on the other side of things, but the more I stare at this football game, the more I sit here and say, I think the Dolphins could absolutely beat this Chargers thing, and I think I'm going to stamp it as my big upset of the week. I'm picking the Dolphins over the Chargers in Miami.
I have a tough time with this because this Chargers offensive line has been really bad, and then you have the addition that Omarion Hampton is injured, and you have Quentin Johnston, who's also questionable. I certainly think this is going to be a game that could drop the Chargers down to 3-3. I just don't see them being. I just don't see the Dolphins being able to stop the Chargers' passing game, even with the rushers. I just don't like their secondary. And so while I do think this will be a closer game than a lot of people say, I think the Chargers are going to win this game.
Yeah, Dolphins defense, historically, this is one of the worst defenses in Miami history. Worst cornerbacks in the NFL. They're really bad, so you should watch for Herbert and what he's doing. I don't care if their O-line is bad. Dolphins defense can't do a thing. But I'm still taking my Dolphins. There's no way. There's no way I'm not going to pick the Chargers over the Dolphins. Sorry.
Wow, we went 2-1 on the Dolphins here.
I was tempted to go 3-0, but I was like, we got to bring normalcy back.
It's going to be rough, though. It's going to be rough because if Herbert can sling it, the Dolphins' corners are just
it just screams
bad.
To me like, oh, the Dolphins up 24-14 now in the late in the third quarter. I'm just hearing it on Red Zone right now. Next up. Pittsburgh and Cleveland. In Pittsburgh, the Steelers coming off the bye week after winning in Dublin, Ireland. Steelers are rested. Steelers certainly look to get back on track offensively after, I would say, some mid-level play from that front. But they've been able to kind of deep strike here and there. The Browns are going with the rookie, and the rookie played all right in London, but it's a long travel coming back off of that game. Off of a very tough last-minute loss to that Vikings team. Cleveland does pass the rush, or rush the passer very well. I wonder if that's going to be an issue in this football game with Aaron Rodgers being moved around against Myles Garrett. That could be cause for concern. I am tempted to pick the Browns, but I am not going to go with the rookie quarterback here. Give me the Steelers to get the win at home.
Yeah, so I'm going to pick the Browns. I think that this Pittsburgh defense is reeling a little bit. Jalen Ramsey is questionable, and while I do think they have the superior team on paper, I think that Quinshon Judkins for Cleveland has been a little bit of a revelation. I think that he'll be able to beat this Pittsburgh rush defense pretty well, so I'm going to take the Browns in this one in an upset while the rookie gets some passing game off for sure.
Man, I don't think the Browns beat the Steelers. I think Steelers are too well coached, even though they're not that great. I think they're one of the, they're overrated teams as well. But I still think the Browns are a bad team. I like Garrett, but other than that, yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers should handle business.
By the way, they have the over under at 38.5 for that football game.
Really?
38.5. Next up. Patriots and Saints in New Orleans in the Superdome. The Patriots coming off of obviously somewhat of a defining win over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday night. So classic trap game for the Patriots, certainly coming off of that on the road. Nothing's guaranteed on the road in the National Football League. But, with the way they were able to kind of front that Josh Allen offense and really keep everything in front of them, Christian Gonzalez has been a major difference maker since he's come back off the injury side of things. Milton Williams has been phenomenal on the defensive tackle side of things for the New England Patriots, which makes me feel like the Saints aren't going to get much interior ability to block him. I think this Patriots defense can feast in this game. Drake May needs to make the plays that happen that need to happen. And please, for the love of God, Ramondre Stevenson, do not fumble the football. Patriots should roll in New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm going to go with New England as well. I think this is going to be the defining part of the season for this team, because if New England can string together a couple of wins in this soft part of their schedule, you could possibly see them being a dark horse to win this AFC East. I think this is a game they got to win. Hopefully they have that sort of mindset going into this game, because as you said, it is a classic trap game. But I think they'll be able to get it done through the passing game. So give me the New England Patriots in this one.
Good teams beat bad teams. Simple as that. Either they're going to beat them or not. I mean, I like New England, what they're doing, but if you lose to the Saints right now, Saints are just not good. They better win. Patriots better win. Otherwise, you should be disappointed, Phil. You should be like, all right, pack it up. Season's over.
I will be back to where I was before the
Bills
game.
But Patriots.
Next up, Tennessee at Las Vegas. The poop bowl of all poop bowls for this week should be horrible football. Badly coached football so far between these two teams. Can you argue that these were maybe the worst coached teams so far this National Football League? Somebody's got to win. I'm feeling Tennessee. I feel like Tennessee just has a little bit more juice to them in terms of what they have offensively and the weapons. I think they can be okay on defense as well. Just got to get through 60 minutes of football without having to make dumb decisions. I like Cam Ward's upside over. Geno Smith's been horrible in terms of the turnover department. Give me the Tennessee Titans to win on the road in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Las Vegas Raiders. Both of these defenses are the worst at allowing rush TDs. I think the Titans have allowed a rush TD in every single game this season. So, give me Ashton Jeudy to have a big game in this one. I think Max Crosby will wreak havoc on the other side. So, yeah, give me the Raiders.
Yeah, I don't see Pete Carroll. I mean, he got embarrassed last week. I don't see him coming back with another loss, especially against this Titans team. I know the Raiders are bad, but they're just they shouldn't be as bad as the Titans. Callahan, I don't know how he has a job still. But
agreed.
Yeah, he's been coaching for way too long. Yeah, anyways. Yeah, the Raiders, I think they'll pull it out. I think they need to come back from what getting demolished last week. Raiders should take it.
Next up, Niners and Bucks in Tampa Bay. Marquee game of the week, I would say. The San Francisco 49ers coming off what some would argue the most miraculous win of Kyle Shanahan's career in terms of his coaching prowess and his ability. Mac Jones making things happen with a cast of characters that I don't think even Niner fans would say had a chance to beat the Los Angeles Rams, and yet they do. And now they have to go to Tampa and go shoot out with one of the best teams in football in terms of scoring the football. The Niners will look to certainly lean on more of those young defensive pieces to make impact plays on it. No Bucky Irving for Tampa. We'll see what that stands out to it. Very interested to see what Upton Stout maybe does if he's facing off against Emeka Egbuka. Are the Niners finally going to get a rushing touchdown? That's my number one question of this one as well. I'm going to pick Tampa in a valiant effort for San Francisco, but I think Tampa just is going to take care of it in Tampa.
You guys know Malik Mustafa's coming back?
There,
oh,
big one.
Oh, my
big
goodness. I'm so excited for that. But, yeah, this game is going to be defined by how can the San Francisco 49ers secondary stop this passing attack. We saw in Seattle that is a good team, a good defense, that the Buccaneers were able to torch them even without Mike Evans and Bucky Irving. And as much as a Niners fan as I am, I still think that's going to be a mismatch that they'll be able to take care of. Yes, I do agree that the Bucs kind of sort of play down to the level of the opposing team, and the 49ers injuries without them, they've still been playing pretty good. I just don't see a path for this team. So, yeah, give me the Buccaneers. Maybe I can have that little bit of a reverse jinx like I did last week.
There you go.
See, that's where, you know, me being a guest producer and stuff is awesome, because I don't have to, I could be biased. So you guys picking it against your own team, it's awesome. I love it. So, Tampa should win. I think it's going to be close. 49ers not having a rushing touchdown is insane to me, because that's kind of what they've been known for, is rushing the ball, especially with McCaffrey. So I think there's one of those teams that are kind of overrated to me as well. I feel like Tampa, although it's going to be close because they can't seem to win, get by more than three touchdowns or two touchdowns. They want to go down to the wire. I think it'll go down to the wire. Tampa still wins, though.
Next up, Cincy at Green Bay. If I told you after 2012, when Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl, he'd be playing 13 years later for the Cincinnati Bengals, I would not believe you. And yet here he is, ready to try to beat the Green Bay Packers for the second time in 3 weeks. Go figure. The Packers coming off the bye. The Packers certainly, I don't know how they certainly feel after their last 2 weeks of performance, if you see their last couple games. But it'll be interesting to see where they stand coming off of the bye week. I think this is a get-right game for the Packers. I think this is a game that certainly feels like they should be able to handle business. But weird things can happen. But it's in Green Bay. I feel like Green Bay has to take care of it. And I'm going to go Packers. Packers should win big.
This is my crazy upset of the week.
Oh, boy.
For me. I don't know. I just feel like I saw something out of that offense in Cincinnati against Detroit last week. And the Packers, I just feel like they're a very good team, but they just find ways to not necessarily come out the strongest. I think with Joe Flacco coming into this Bengals team, it'll provide a little bit of a, not necessarily a spark, but something that the Packers are not accustomed to seeing, Joe Flacco in this offense, and they'll find a way to have a shock victory. I'm not necessarily saying this is going to be, my biggest prediction, but I just think that there's going to be a way that they find a win. So give me the Cincinnati Bengals.
The Bengals are outright 14-point underdogs.
Hey, and they'll cover and they'll win.
The biggest, Bengals are so bad.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that Lions game, that was not close. They scored a little bit at the end, but that was not a close game. The Lions were in control of that the whole time. Yeah, Flacco, you go from one of the worst quarterbacks to the second worst quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, I don't have any faith in them. Green Bay should run the table.
All right, last game of our slate. It's the Lions and the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs, of course, coming off that loss to Jacksonville. Chris Jones saying he has a lot to answer for after he lollygagged on that Trevor Lawrence touchdown. Called it a learning moment. And the Chiefs have a lot of learning moments here.
$100 million guy.
Yeah, geez. They're not healthy. They are not healthy. And I don't know what weapons they have to match with what Detroit has in this football game. I clearly and evidently, the talent disparity should be enough for this Detroit Lion team, who has been rolling the last few weeks, to get a victory for the Detroit Lions. I don't see it any other way. Kansas City is going to start 2-4. Detroit's going to find a way to roll in this football game and win it.
Yeah, I think the biggest discrepancy here is I think the Chiefs' running game or rush defense has been pretty abhorrent this year. So when you have David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs coming into town, I think it's going to be a tough matchup for them. Give me the Detroit Lions. And honestly, I don't think this is going to be close. I think they win by double digits.
Yeah, Lions are easily one of the better teams around. I mean, I knew it was going to take a second losing, you know, your coordinators and stuff. But the first few games, it looked a little rough. But they're finding their groove. I think the Lions should handle business for sure.
Well, there it is. That is your Benatti Blitz brought to you by Grocery Outlet. You can fade the music there, Joe. And we'll take us to break as we try to peel ourselves off this couch. It's been lovely. But unfortunately, we have some show to finish up over at our normal spot. So we'll do that. Take a break. Wrap up the show. Preview Giants-Eagles next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Here for one more segment of our show. Dodgers are currently bottom of the sixth. They're runner in first and third with two away, and it's 1-2 count. Bryce Harper just missed out on catching a ball in the dugout of the Phillies. That would have flown out Tommy Edman from that. That would have been a pop out that would have ended the inning for the Dodgers. But the Dodgers certainly threatening here. Teoscar with a big hit to make it first and second with one out. And we'll see if they can, the Phillies can get out of this, or if the Dodgers can happen. Maybe I'm going to do play by play just for a pitcher and chopped away foul. All right. Let's talk about tonight's game: Eagles Giants. Daily spread brought to you by Chichancey Gold Resort Casino. If you're not trying your luck with some teams, try your luck at Chichancey Gold Resort and Casino. Taking a look at the spread, last I saw, it was going to be Eagles tonight. 7.5-point favorites on the road over the New York Giants. We mentioned it earlier here, Tanvir, the Jalen Carter injury could certainly make things interesting, but I don't know if it makes things close in tonight's game. You could see a scenario where this Eagles offense just kind of stalls out again like it kind of did against Denver tonight, but Denver's defense is, I think, an infinitely better unit potentially on the wholesome side than New York does. But New York has its pressures and its ability to pressure the football in terms of it as well. And so I know Saquon was dealing with something in the middle of this week as well in terms of injury possibility. He seems like he's obviously ready to go. The more I sit here and think about it, the 7.5 number feels a little high for me. I feel like this is a 6-point Eagle victory. So I would go Giants on the spread if I were going to be leaning that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Giants have an opportunity here to, I don't know if they're going to win this game, but I think they're going to have an opportunity to make it close. As I said at the top of the show, I think Cam Scataboo and as you said, Jackson Dart, both have opportunities in the middle of the park to kind of run on this Eagles defense. I think that Eagles are getting Nolan Smith back, if I'm not mistaken, and that'll be a big help for them. Jordan Davis, I think, is going to have a big game for Philadelphia if they are to put this game away early. But I think the Giants have an opening. Will I see them take that opening? I don't know. I don't think so. But we will see. In terms of the spread, this is a Philadelphia team that has not necessarily impressed me on the offensive side of the ball, and they have a good defensive line coming into town. So we will see how that works out. But I'm tempted to just say Eagles still win this game by eight or more. I do still believe in that offense. And with the losses of Darius Slayton and Malik Nabers, I think it's going to be a tall task for the Giants to win this game. So, yeah, that's where I stand on this game.
I think it's an Eagles by three. I think it's just one of those classic Thursday nights of, like, it's and, just
hey,
divisional teams.
I love that. I want to see a good game tonight. So
divisional teams playing a close football game. Joe, where are you leaning on Eagles-Giants tonight as we finish up our picks for this week?
Man, if the Eagles don't beat these guys, that's sad. The Giants aren't any good. Yes, Dart is starting again. I mean, he's not, to me so far, he hasn't done anything to impress me. He's a rookie. Scatterboo had a pretty nasty fumble last week. Get him some new gloves. So I don't know. It shouldn't be close to me. I know it's a division game, Giants, Eagles, blah, blah, blah. But the Eagles, you know, your Super Bowl champions, you guys should be – I mean, you heard the ball taking little shots at them, you know. Yeah. A.J. Brown's open all the time. So I think the Eagles, they should roll today. I don't think it should be close, honestly.
Can we talk quickly, like, the implications if the Eagles were to lose today? Like, I think that would be big for the psyche of – the Commanders, for sure, getting Jaden Daniels back and winning a game against the Chargers. I think that the Eagles, for me, like a couple weeks into the season, they were looking like that team. I think they're just going to run away with the NFC East, but now you have a loss on the Philly side of things against Denver in a weird way. And now if you lose this game, I think you open up that possibility that Washington could come through and win this division series, because I think that they'll not only have the team, but they'll have the confidence to win.
Not just Washington.
Dallas, Dallas.
I'm not ignoring Dallas. No. I have talked about Dallas this year a little bit at the beginning, and I was a little more higher on Dallas than a lot of people. So I'm not ignoring the idea. Dallas only two losses in the win column. The tie is very interesting in terms of what that all looks like too as well. So, and I think Dallas plays a little bit of a lighter schedule than those
Dallas.
Two teams.
Dallas plays hard. I'll say that. I think they play really hard, but I think they're lacking on the defensive side.
Yeah, when you have an offense that can just score points on end, you're always going to have a chance.
You like it. You like it, certainly. The Dodgers were thwarted in that bottom of the sixth chance, by the way. Edmund grounded out to the pitcher, Sanchez. So it's now the seventh inning. We're flying along here.
Another
game four.
It's coming down to the wire.
Coming down to the wire. Feels like it's just going to be like one swing of the bat here for either of these teams tonight in terms of it. Who's the hero if the Dodgers win? Who are you saying the hero is?
I think Mookie's been playing decent. I think that he's just put balls in areas that can give the Dodgers some points. So I think if there's going to be a win on LA's side, I think it's going to be through him. I think if it's through Philly, I'd probably say Schwarber. I think that Schwarber really showed that power last night, and I think that he can show it again against this bullpen for the Dodgers that has not necessarily been great outside of Roky Sasaki.
I think Bryce needs something here. I think if you're the Philadelphia, you need to see some life from Bryce Harper. In terms of it, so we'll see. That
Harper's
is over
been
on
quiet.
790.
Harper's been
He's
very
been bad.
Quiet.
He's been bad. Yep. That's on 790. Reminder that we'll have Sharks tonight on 790 as well, as Riamilto just hit a single. We will have Thursday Night Football coming up next. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening to our show. We'll be back 3 o'clock tomorrow. See you then.